All right. Not too long ago, maybe a couple of months or so, we had on a guest and we talked about the art of improv, and we talked about the way they're applying it to treat people with, or to help people kind of get over some symptoms of PTSD, and the way they're applying it in the business world, etc. And that was a fun interview. That was a friend of mine from back in West Virginia. We want to talk more about the art of improv, and it is an art form. We'll talk about that, everything that it involves, what it can be used for, how it can be a heck of a lot of fun, and we're going to tell you how you can maybe learn a little bit more about it, possibly get involved and participate as well, because there's a performance in... Is that what you want to call it, a performance? What do you want, a workshop? What do you want to call this thing?
Well, it's called an improv jam.
An improv jam.
So it's kind of like a workshop. Normally an improv jam could be when you have different improv troupes that come together and just sort of play and learn new games and do it together. But since we don't have improv troupes here, it's kind of a workshop performance, because as people kind of come up and learn, they're basically performing.
Okay.
While they're learning.
That voice you hear, by the way, is the voice of our guest, Mary DeMichel, who's going to be at Great Stone Coffee. This is coming up next week. It's the 10th, right?
Yes.
Okay.
So Saturday.
Saturday the 10th. What time does everything begin?
7 to 9 p.m.
Okay, and that's a great little setting for it. You can sit back, you can relax, you can have some of their food, you can have some drinks as well. And it's fairly intimate, which I think is important to improv.
Absolutely. It is a great setting.
But that intimacy, and this is one of the things you kind of want to let people know, you know, move up close, get involved, don't be afraid to participate. I think audiences sometimes don't want to be the first person to laugh or the first person to raise their hand. Improv works because of and with audience participation. You've got to have something to play off of.
Well, the beauty of improv is it's completely collaborative. So not only are the players collaborating, but the audience is part of every game because they give the initial suggestions, which makes them part of the collaborative process. So the audience doesn't sit there as, like, judgmental audience people going, I don't know. I don't know if I'm going to clap or laugh. I don't know
right.
if I like it. They're part of it. So they're supportive. And the players are supporting the audience. It's very intimate and supportive.
And I know that I've done this. I'm guilty of it as an audience member at an improv show, trying to throw something out there that is so off the wall, it will throw off the improvisationists and really make them have to think on their feet. You know, when I talked with people involved in improv, one of the things they told me was the hardest thing that they had to learn was to stop thinking about what they were going to say and trying to be funny and just kind of let things flow, because you don't have time to write out a joke.
No, you don't. And it's very counterintuitive, but improv is practiced. And the more you practice it and the more you rehearse it, the faster you get at trusting yourself that you can just flow with ideas. And I don't know if you want to talk about it now, but actually it gets you into that part of the brain where you flow, where you kind of get into the zone. You know how athletes always talk
sure.
about being in the zone? Well, improv, people when they do improv can get into the zone also. And we have the brain research that has come out and shown that when people do improv, it's basically the neural signature of what they call this mental state of flow or being in the zone.
Right. So let's talk about that stuff later.
Absolutely.
Let's talk first just briefly a little bit on your background, how you got into this and why.
Well, I got into improv as an adult. It was the mid-90s, so it was before Whose Line hit the airwaves. And I took a class. And
the Drew Carey Whose Line or the British Whose Line?
The Drew Carey Whose Line. So obviously okay. the British had been on for 10 years, and we've kind of seen glimpses of it, but before the American one hit. And I took a class that turned into two or three classes, and then the group of us, we were like, hey, let's start a troupe. And we did. So we were performing. I performed with them for 7 years. We rehearsed every Thursday. We performed a couple times every month. And they're still in existence. We just celebrated the 21st year, and I just flew back for the performance.
Well, congratulations.
And it was amazing to just get back up and be with people you've never performed with and people I haven't seen in years. And it was like riding a bike. It was really great that way. Like a lot of people who get into improv, I experienced it, and I felt the transformation pretty quickly. You find it affecting how you handle things in other parts of your life. I found at work I was kind of jumping in and speaking up at meetings more, or I was just, my confidence was up. And being a teacher, I wanted to share that. So I brought it into the classroom. I was teaching high school at the time. And I brought it into the classroom, and I got a lot of the results that people who do improv know you're going to get, the communication, the creativity, the interpersonal skills. Teaching just became so much easier because the kids were like an ensemble in the classroom working so well together.
And, you know, I think most people, or a lot of people, probably do a little bit of improv every day and don't even realize what they're doing is improv. You know, I'll walk around here every day. You know, if somebody says something, you know, I'll have a smart aleck remark or a quick one-liner, or I'll reference a TV show, or I'll pull out a line from that, or I'll pull out a song reference, or I'll just make a quick little witty remark. It's kind of improv.
Kind of. It can be. It definitely shows that you're quick and you're spontaneous and you have flow. So it's some of the characteristics of improv. But when I say improv, improv is an art form. I'll get back to that. But
sure.
Improv is an art form. We're talking about those 30-second to 3-minute long games that you may have seen on Whose Line Is It Anyway? And they're all framed by this rule, I'm sure you've heard, yes and.
Right.
And that is the mighty powerful rule of improv. And all that is yes, I agree with you, and I'm going to add to what you said. And instead of it, instead of when you yes and, when you take someone else's idea and you add to it, you validate them, they feel validated. It helps their self-esteem, their confidence. They begin to trust you. You begin to trust people because now within every interaction you have in an improv game, your idea is going to be accepted. So you also feel validated and you start to trust others and trust yourself. And it all comes down to yes and. So a lot of times, Whose Line has been phenomenal with getting people to become familiar with what improv is. But what gets lost in that oftentimes is they don't understand, or they're not familiar with yes and, or they minimize it when they try it because they're learning improv from watching Whose Line.
Sure.
Only what they're seeing is the comedic spontaneous outcome that was made possible by yes and. So I've seen so many troops over the years and really talented people, and they get up there and it's a funny situation, and they go for the joke, or they roll their eyes, or someone says, oh my goodness, I'm bleeding, and they don't agree and add. They say, no, you're not. And it gets a laugh just like that. And it's funny,
but it kills the flow.
But it's not improv. It kills the flow. It invalidates that other person. He just had his idea, his offer that he brought to the stage in front of all these people, shot down and laughed at.
And it's kind of, it's almost one-upsmanship. You know, someone trying to get their joke over bigger by defeating the other person's joke, mm-hmm. which to me defeats the communalism of what improv has to be and playing off of each
Absolutely.
Other.
Absolutely, and it's called a denial. And although there's really one rule to focus on, I mean, that's my approach in improv, and that's yes and. There's a few different ways to deny, and it's any way that you either don't agree or you just don't add on.
And by the way, listeners, she did a yes and with me. When I said that kind of coming up with little witty one-liners is a kind of improv, she did the yes and so she kind of validated me a little bit, even though I wasn't right on target,
yeah.
And she moved on to build on that. So now all of a sudden I feel, I'm pretty loose on the show anyway, but I feel a little looser anyway. My audience knows I love bad jokes and I'm not afraid to tell them on the air. So you talked about teaching there for a moment. What's the hardest part about teaching someone improv? You know, I do play-by-play on sports, mm-hmm. and people ask me all the time, you know, and I started doing a class on it, teaching a class at a high school, and one of the things I had going into the class when they asked me to teach it was, well, I don't believe you can teach play-by-play, mm-hmm. because either someone has it or they don't. They know how to do it or they don't. You can't make someone be able to get into the flow of a game and a broadcast and do it. So I had to teach it more of a broadcasting. It's very difficult, I think, for me to teach play-by-play. What's the hardest thing about teaching improv? Because I asked you before the show, can you teach someone to be funny? You said it's not about that.
Yeah, that's the beauty of improv. It's one of the That's one of the hardest things to overcome is basically the misunderstandings about improv and the way people focus on the funny aspect, but that's something else for maybe later. But in terms of teaching improv, I don't really have trouble teaching people how to do improv because I understand it. It is an art form. It developed in the 1950s. It's developed over the decades. But I see it as something that is completely accessible if you follow the process. There's going to be some people who are naturally witty and funny and no boundaries, and they'll excel at certain games, and they won't excel at other games. But people who are completely introverted and don't ever want to try it, they're going to excel immediately at some games, too, and others will be a little bit more challenging. But with improv, anyone can do it because if you just follow one rule, you will find yourself up there doing it. And one of the things I love the best when I get a group of people that they don't know why they're there, they really don't want to do it, and they're scared to death because they're going to be in front of people and they think they have to be funny, they get up there and they follow one rule, they do a game, and these are simple games, and people are laughing, and they feel great because they find out it is funny without having to be funny.
The games, and you mentioned simple games. I want to get your opinion on this because the guy that I worked with in West Virginia who did some of the shows would ask me for honest feedback, and he was a good enough friend that he knew, or I knew, I could be honest with him. And you know, they started out doing some of the really short games, some of the ones you see on the TV shows that the audiences are familiar with, and they wanted to grow as a troupe, and they started branching out and started doing more long form. And I had to, you know, one night I told him, to me, and it's strictly my opinion, I have a hard time with the longer form improv because it seems like you guys lose the flow sometimes or it goes off on it. It's harder to maintain to me the humor in that. Do you have a preference on length of game? Do you find that some work better or does it really just depend on the night, the audience, and the performers?
For my purpose, I'm most experienced in short form. I enjoy short form and I find short form the most applicable to helping people use improv to gain the benefits of it versus long form. So if I'm going to go in and I have a group of people, and I know we'll talk about this in the next segment, who are wanting to do improv for therapeutic purposes, educational, personal, business, doing 30-second to 3-minute games to get those results for them is really powerful.
And I just always felt that it was easier for the audience and more of what the audience expected as well when they come out for a theater in the park night and they're expecting to see improv comedy. They want to see more of what they're used to, and I think that they kind of get kind of like when some of those musicians in the 70s would record those 8, 9, or 10 minute songs. You know, people want that quick radio hit sometimes instead of that 8 or 9 or 10 minute epic, which can be beautiful musicianship if you're the type of artist who knows how to recognize that, not necessarily to the general audience sometimes.
Oh, absolutely. They like the familiar.
We've got the forecast coming up. Ray Miller will be joining us here in roughly a minute or so. We are going to talk about applying improv in the many different ways that it can be used. But let's talk just very briefly again about what's coming up when you're at Greatstone, because I don't know if I hit on that properly or not earlier. You want people to come out to see what's happening, and it's an opportunity to learn by participation.
Or not participating either. If you just want to watch, come and watch. Check it out. But it's a great opportunity, like you just said, to come and just check it out, see what it really is, how it really works. And whether or not, if you have experience, great. If you have stage experience, great. If you have absolutely no experience and you don't even want to get up there, just come and you might find yourself getting up there. I'll be asking for people to kind of sign up, give me your experience, and I'll put people up there so they can feel most successful and really enjoy themselves.
And if I say something that's wrong or misleading, please correct me, but I would say to someone, you know, don't plan on coming out expecting to do a night of stand-up comedy. And I tell this ironically to the kids who I'm trying to teach play-by-play to, too, don't have those one or two lines that you want to try to work in because it doesn't seem natural and it doesn't work.
Well, it doesn't work. It kills improv. You have to yes and. So you have to build off what the other person said.
Let's get to our WeatherEye Weather Center forecast with meteorologist Ray Miller and get a look at what's happening. All right, we're heading into our bottom of the hour news break. Our guest for this first hour is Mary DeMichelle. We're talking about the art of improv. And you were showing me you've actually written some books on the subject, right?
Right, yes, I have.
You have, what's your first one titled?
The first one is Improv and Inked. Improv and Ink. I don't overcoming. I don't know what to write.
Okay.
And when I was in the classroom, I told you that the kids had developed the skills I expected, creativity and communication. Well, one of the things I didn't expect was it helped with writing fluency. I used to have to run around the room and encourage them to write and get them to write more, et cetera. And after doing improv, I didn't have that problem. And I looked at them, they were all writing, and I asked one of the students, and she looked at me and said, yes, and. So I was, wow, because people transfer this stuff on their own. But I thought, what if we can make this happen in a short period of time and make sure we get the results we want? So I put together a series of games and researched it, and the results were great. It seems that improv can actually address social-emotional issues as well as literacy deficits simultaneously. So kids who have a resistance to writing can overcome that, sometimes just within, you know, 5 class periods.
So teachers out there, if you're looking for fun ways to get to get your classes involved and are looking for some outside-the-box ideas, these are some opportunities. It works. It gets results. Consider doing a little bit of improv, and later on we'll tell you how you can learn more if you want to learn more from Mary or just get more information. We'll give you some of those details a little bit later on. If time permits, maybe, and I don't know if time will permit or not, but if it does, maybe we can do a little two-person. Is there some kind of little two-person back-and-forth quick improv we could do?
We could demonstrate yes and.
We could try that. I would probably fail miserably.
No, I'm sure you'd be fine.
But it would absolutely be worth a shot. Okay, we've got your news coming up here at the bottom of the hour. We'll have more with Mary when we get back from the bottom of the hour news. And then don't forget, coming up again at 5. RMS. All right, welcome back in. Don't forget, we'll also have your Camdenton Lakers Teacher of the Week coming up a little bit later on in the program. I've got to get back in the flow. I've got to remember how to do Fridays and how Fridays work. I've been out doing high school football for so long, and it's my first Friday back, so I got to make sure that I keep things on track and get things somewhat back to normal. Once again, our guest right now is Mary DeMichelle. We're talking about improv. We've talked about, you know, what it is and you know, what it means in terms of, you know, what people recognize as improv and humor and comedic performance. But we touched just mildly, and I want to go into more depth now on the therapeutic nature of what you're doing. And basically, long story short, easy way to say it, it kind of comes down to brain power and focusing your brain in different directions. You've got much more detail with bigger Latin-sounding words to explain to people what it is you're doing. And it can be implied not only in terms of therapy, PTSD, as I've discussed on the program before, but in a business setting as well, team building, things of that, in that type of environment. Tell me some of the ways that improv is applied, and more impressively, the things that it can help.
Okay. So in therapy, they are using improv to help people with different kinds of social anxieties, depression, and business. Business right now today is all about reacting, adapting, communicating. It's all about survival and being able to focus your thinking and make rapid decisions. It's being applied to business all over the world. Collaboration, teamwork, spontaneity, innovation, creativity. In education, well, we have a student body. We need to prepare for that work environment. So we need them to be collaborative and have great communication skills and creativity and so on. And if you listen to me, you're going to hear me say the same words or the same terms in different ways. And that's the key. So whether or not we're talking about improv's being adapted in a therapeutic way or a business world or in education, it's because improv develops. Can I read some of these?
Absolutely.
I'm going to read off a list. And these are all the skills and benefits you get from doing improv. Attunement, awareness, focus, mindfulness, creativity, character, trust, respect, tolerance, collaboration, communication, confidence, self-esteem, empathy, resilience, negotiation skills, spontaneity, leadership. It actually decreases anxiety. It increases and deepens learning, increases motivation, productivity, and accountability. And something hopefully we'll get to, it also helps you achieve a mental state of flow. And there's even more than that. And that's why it's so applicable to so many things. And the cool part is, every time you do improv in every game, no matter how basic, those are all developing simultaneously with no extra effort. Okay, so if you're teaching improv to people, you don't have to go, okay, hey, where's your confidence? I need to see more confidence. You need to speak louder. You don't have to focus on any of them. They're just developing. And I know it sounds like snake oil. You know, and it sounds like, yeah, I couldn't possibly do all that. But it's the rule, the foundational rule of improv, which we mentioned before.
Yes, and.
That's it.
Let me ask you, because I've always been curious about this. But you mentioned you worked with a group of people for multiple years in the same troupe. When you have that familiarity and you have that trust that grows with each other, and you work together so regularly, how do you keep that familiarity from detracting from the improvisational, off-the-cuff nature of what it is you're doing? How do you keep it fresh?
The nature of improv is every suggestion from the audience is spontaneous. You don't know what you're getting. So it keeps it fresh. Now, I know there's some troupes where they'll switch out members every so many months or every so many years. We had different members come in and out during the year, so that always added stuff. But this is really great. You gave me a phenomenal lead-in for this. You mentioned how there's familiarity. What else? There's trust. And basically, those are actually triggers, which I'll get to, that helps you get into that zone, that flow part of the brain again.
Let's go right into it.
Okay. So, besides improv being able to develop all these skills and give you all these benefits, what they've discovered through brain research, through brain scans, that when you do improv, the part of the brain that is self-editing, it's when you get in your head and you're like, is this right? Is that right? How do I do this? And you're recalling all your memory and the steps. That gets really quiet. And the part of your brain that's associated with, like, expression and when you feel like you're in the zone, when things seem effortless, that gets very active. And it's called the flow state of the brain. And improv basically is the neural signature of flow state. And that's when you feel your best, you perform your best. And some of those, and actually improv, there's a book by Stephen Kotler, came out in 2014, I think The Rise of Superman, and he talks about 17 triggers that can help someone get into that part of their brain for peak performance. And improv meets 16 of them.
Wow.
Yeah. So by playing just those short improv games, you are training your brain to get to that part of your brain. So I think a lot of times in some of the therapy, like you mentioned with PTSD, no matter where you are in your brain, improv gets you to the part of your brain where you feel your best and you perform your best. And the joy of that is if you were a jazz musician or if you're a tennis player, it might take 10 years to get that good that you feel like you're in the zone. But improv doesn't take that long at all. And you can get there and get these benefits by playing just basic games. You never have to do those really cool, complicated scene games that you see on Whose Line that you're like, I could never do that. You don't have to do that to get the benefits. There's really basic games. Like, we can play Yes And right now. And all those same benefits can come just from that.
Let's see how bad I am at Yes And. Yes And. Let's just try something short until okay. I'm so horrible I decide to cut it off and save face.
Okay. So there's a real basic game, Yes And. I call it Yes And Plan, and we're going to plan a type of party.
Okay.
Okay. So what kind of party do you want to plan?
An anniversary party.
An anniversary party for anyone in particular?
Nope,
just an anniversary
party. Just an anniversary party.
Okay, so go ahead, say, hey, let's plan an anniversary party.
Hey, let's plan an anniversary party.
Yes, and we can have it catered.
Yes, and in addition to catering, we can have a DJ.
Yes, and we could have a cake with the couple's picture on it.
Yes, and maybe their favorite song.
Yes, and that's the game. That's Yes And.
Just kind of building on each other.
You just kind of build on each other and because of that, every idea I come up with, he validates, and that makes me feel great. And eventually I start to trust that my ideas are okay. And that gives me self-confidence and self-esteem. And by yes-anding, you also are validated. And you know what? You can't be thinking off in your head about what to say next or trying to be funny, because you have to listen to every word I say, because you have to add to it.
And build on what you just added to the part.
Which keeps us focused in the moment. And we're collaborating. So yes-and is the framework for interpersonal collaboration. And it's a structure.
And for the audience at the same time, we're kind of building that scene that then that they see develop before them and in front of them. And you know, when the audience starts to participate, you know, they can throw out some ideas. Okay, well, he thought about having a DJ. Somebody else may have thought about having a band. You know, it can go a different direction every single time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. When you apply this, what are you doing now in terms of how you see this applying and how you can bring that to people personally, individually?
So what I've done, and through my experience, I've been doing this for 20 years, and you asked me earlier what I thought the hardest part about teaching improv was. Mm-hmm. I think teaching and learning improv is really easy. What the hard part is either, one, getting people to understand it so they try it, because there's such that misconception of I have to be funny.
Right.
Okay? And you can, they can buy into it, they can love it, they can see the research, and they're like, whoa, not for me, it's just not my thing. And then once you get past that, then it's the misunderstanding of improv of, well, this is how you do it, let's be funny. And I've seen so many amazing people deny each other on stage, and I'm like, you're losing everything. So a lot of times, we were talking, I think, off air, how the application of improv has really boomed since after 2002. It's really exploded in all these other fields. And so many people have been exposed to it, but since they don't understand the process and what's happening, they don't do it correctly. And once you deny, like if we were playing our game and I said, no, let's not have a DJ, no, I would have gotten a laugh, maybe, but I would have invalidated him. And we wouldn't have that trust or that collaboration. And so what I had to do was find a way that not only helped them understand what improv was, but also explain to them the process of it and then give them a way to teach it themselves and understand it themselves. So I focus on, my approach is focusing on one rule, just yes and. Because if you just yes and, so many of the other rules that usually get taught, like make your partner look good. I'm like, can you imagine the first time you're doing improv, you get up in front of a group of people and someone tells you, now make him look good. Like, what's that mean? Versus, hey, just yes and.
Okay.
So.
You want to talk about the new book yet?
Sure. Very good. Yeah, so I have a book. It's going to be published in early 2019. And it's a way for anybody to teach, learn, and apply improv. And we focus on how to articulate what it is so people understand what it is, so you increase people willing to try it and help them do it correctly. And also when they, the way I do the games, it's pretty much my educational and instructional design background. I understand that you have to start with the learner, who is our player, and the player, who is our learner, and end with them. So it's got to be relevant. If you're teaching improv or wanting to learn improv for skills and benefits, not just to be on stage, people have to understand what they're going to get out of that game, how it really applies to them. And at the end of the game, to show them how to integrate their own workplace material or educational material, you know? So like teaching, wow, if you had an activity that you could do at the beginning of class that accomplished all of this skill development, get your kids out of whatever part of the brain they were in and in a great place to learn and could integrate your curriculum, it's awesome.
It's all right there wrapped up in one nice little tool. Yeah. The name of the book, I'm assuming that's not going to change.
No, that's not going to change.
Okay,
no.
One Rule Improv is mm-hmm. the title of the new book. How will it be available when it comes out?
When it comes out, it will be Amazon, Barnes & Noble. And if you do want to keep in touch and get some more information so I can let you know when it is available for pre-order and any price discounts, feel absolutely free to check out my blog at onerulimprov.com. Or if you can remember everywhereimprov.com, you can sign up for my newsletter, and I will definitely keep in touch. You can learn more about improv. If you have your cell phone right now and you'd like to text the word improv to 345-345, you can sign up for the newsletter and keep in touch that way. If you'd like to email me directly, you can find me on my information on that blog site, One Rule Improv.
Okay. Now, I mentioned earlier, you know, people who are, you know, will go to the business meetings and kind of teach. Do you do some of that? Do you go into business? Do you take bookings like that and kind of, you know, do consultation on improv?
Yes, absolutely. Actually, I've been working here with Kalo for a number of months, close to a year. All of the employees have either gone through exposure to improv or training with improv, and some are actually training to facilitate it.
Okay. Once again, next week is going to be on November 10th at Great Stone Coffee, 7 to 9 p.m., correct?
Yes, 7 to 9. Oh, and it is family-friendly. I'm very G-rated.
Okay. So you don't have to worry about that. You don't have to worry about any of some of those Ryan Stiles or Colin Mockery jokes. It will be family-friendly, and it will be entertaining, and it will be educational. We highly encourage you to come out. And KB is going to be talking with this fine lady again. I believe it is Wednesday morning when they broadcast live on the morning magazine from over at Great Stone Coffee, so you'll get to learn even more about it that morning as well. Once again, check out the blog, check out her website, and 345-345 is the number to text improv, and you'll get signed up for that newsletter. Mary, thank you so much.
Thank you so much. This has been great.
It's been a ton of fun.